Welcome to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. Thank you all for being with us for today's edition. A couple of quick notes before we get into the heart of the show. Number one, of course, you can watch the show if you'd like to see video on the GPB News Facebook page. You can watch us on Facebook Live there. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you want to take part in the conversation. We do try to get to at least some of your tweets as we go on in the show. And then finally, just a reminder, on Thursday, June 7th, we're heading down to Columbus, Georgia. We're going to do the show in front of a live audience down there. And if you want to join us, there's no charge for coming to see the show. Go to gpb.org/community. You'll find all the information you need about the show there. And if you register, at least we'll save you a spot and know you're coming. So I hope we see an awful lot of you down in Columbus for that show. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the AJC, is with us. And Jim, because we are up on Facebook Live, we should point out you've got a big bandage.
Big bandage, just a little outpatient surgery.
But you're okay.
I'm
we know
fine.
That.
I'm fine.
We know that. We don't want people in the heat of this political season to think that they were responding to something you wrote and came and clubbed you over the head for some reason.
Well, let's just say I've got more than usual face for radio.
Well, I have that every day. Jim, of course, is in the paper on Wednesdays and Sundays, and you read him and his colleagues in Political Insider as part of the Politically Georgia blog at myajc.com. Right across from Jim Galloway, Melita Easters. She is the founder and director of the Georgia Win List, which is dedicated to finding female candidates who are pro-choice to run in elections. And we're going to...
As Democrats. And thank you for having me on the show.
Glad to have you here. We also are joined by Loretta Lepore. It's Friday, and that's our day to have Loretta come in. She is has been a Republican strategist. She was press secretary to former Governor Sonny Perdue, and actually ran. You were a candidate in one election cycle.
I was, yes.
So you know how nervous everybody is right now with Tuesday approaching.
Yes, and how hard they're working.
Yeah. Lisa Raham is here. Lisa is a reporter. You see her on Lawmakers. She's a GPB News reporter who spends her sessions down at the Capitol on our behalf. And last night, holy cow. Galloway.
I have no bandages on me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Unscathed.
Galloway looks like he was doing your job last night. You had a tough road to hoe.
This woman was the most magnificent herder of cats.
Oh, my goodness.
A whole hour.
I appreciate that.
Elise, pull that microphone right in front of you.
Okay, I appreciate that.
There you go.
Yeah, it was a rough night, but they all came out fighting and. I think everybody in the room walked away with a few bruises, but otherwise
all
okay.
Right. We will talk in just a couple minutes about what happened at the Republican gubernatorial debate, which was the only statewide TV debate, and we will get into it. But we need to address a couple of breaking news stories. We're of course, keeping our eyes on the Santa Fe community outside of Houston, Texas, where we've had another school shooting. The Associated Press now tells us that there were 9 students and one teacher killed.
Yeah, it's giving a range of between 8 and 10. Between 8 and 10.
Yeah. And they have 2 people in custody. Presumably one is the young man, I think, Jim, who they believe to have been the shooter and then a person of interest. And they're only now starting to really give us information about what's going on. In
right, right. It's going to take it's going to take a few hours before we get
even
an outline.
We will keep our eye on that very sad situation and give you any information that breaks while we're on the air. Now, the other breaking news story is entirely political. The House, the U.S. House, was today took up the farm bill, the massive farm bill. Loretta, one of the biggest pieces of legislation that any Congress has to wrestle with, correct?
Right. It's a 5-year bill, extremely comprehensive, affects a good portion, of the country and individuals in many different ways. And it was many ways we don't even think about.
That's exactly right. And your former boss, Sonny Perdue, of course, as agriculture secretary, he created that farm bill, and he was part of the team that shepherded it through Congress. And it, in a huge embarrassment for Speaker Ryan and the House leadership and Republicans in general, it went down in flames this morning.
Well, it did, and it went down because the Freedom Caucus broke rank and went over the issue of immigration.
Right.
And they wanted a vote on immigration reform before the farm bill vote. They had been told they would take it up later this summer. The Freedom Caucus was not okay with that. And so, of course, Democrats voted against this bill, and the Freedom Caucus stood their ground on this particular issue.
Jim, there is huge consequences behind this. Most immediately in terms of Secretary Perdue is he's got to go back to the drawing table. President Trump had been pushing this bill very hard. It's going to be interesting to see the dynamic that develops between the president and Perdue. The president doesn't like people who don't succeed.
Right, right. And the thing to keep in mind is, as Loretta said, this bill expires in September, just before the general election season really, really heats up. And more than likely, it means that they're just going to do a continuation of the current bill and give it a. What was interesting, and this is a little bit hard to describe, that the real fight behind this farm bill debate was over immigration.
Right.
You have a group of moderate Republicans who are fearful for their reelection in swing districts, who are trying who are working with Democrats to put together a discharge petition that would bring to the floor a stripped-down immigration bill that would reinstate the legal status for Dream Kids.
Yes.
They actually have
four separate bills right. They're trying to get for, one of which is a blank bill that, Paul, they're saying to the speaker, you go ahead, Mr. Ryan, you create that fourth bill.
Right. It's called the Queen of the Hill process, and right. I'm not quite clear why. But whichever bill would get the most votes is the one that they would go with, and the Freedom Caucus didn't want this. They don't like bipartisan. They're not fans of bipartisanship. They wanted this issue settled entirely within the Republican Caucus. So theirs was the revolt. And the defeat of the farm bill was their way of saying we're against this.
Well, because they wanted the border wall to move forward and other issues that the president has laid out to move forward.
Yes, among other things. And we can go into some of the other issues that they're concerned about with that as well. Melita, the other thing that's interesting about this, the farm bill included the provision the president and Sonny Perdue were pushing hard, and that was a work requirement for SNAP beneficiaries, or what we used to call food stamp beneficiaries. Highly controversial.
Very controversial. And Democrats really oppose those provisions. And some of the earlier proposals were seen as quite draconian on the part of the Republicans and on the part of Perdue. And so there's a lot of room for bipartisan solutions in that area.
You know, the other thing that's interesting about this, Lisa, is, and Jim kind of sent us sort of in the direction of this. Presumably the next time they will, I mean, the farm bill does expire in September, right before we go to the polls in November. This farm bill would be of great benefit, especially to Midwestern farmers who are struggling right now. We're seeing foreclosures left and right. And this is the heart of Trump's constituency. He's clearly not on the ballot, but I think that Republicans who are up for re-election, incumbents, may find themselves having to do a lot of explaining as to why this bill did not pass.
Well, and the fact that the immigration aspect of it all trickled into last night's debate and played, high ranking in that, I think will play in this overall as well.
Well, there's also another component to this, and that has to do with tariffs. And so the agriculture community is anxious and they're nervous about this conversation about tariffs. And the president really wanted this bill passed to offset what's happening on the tariff side of the equation, to give farmers some consolation and to help them understand that he was on their side working on their behalf.
But in a very real way, this was all theater. because, okay, as I said, the moderate Republicans are wanting that a DACA bill just so they can take it back to their districts. Your Freedom Caucus wanted this, wanted hardcore impositions on food stamp benefits.
Yep.
So they could take it back to their constituents in deep red districts. But in the Senate, nothing that the House was going to pass was going to get any legs, because that's got to be a bipartisan process there on the Farm Bill.
Yeah, and the
but under bill. But under I'm sorry, Bill.
No.
Under current law, states on their own can invoke work requirements, mm-hmm. as we have here in Georgia, and so we have a hodgepodge across the country of states that some do invoke the work requirement, some do not.
Right, and the bill would have required training too, and
right.
a whole lot of states don't have that operation set up.
Right, and that was actually established under Bill Clinton when he first put this forward in the Welfare Reform Act. He had a huge training component that went with that.
All right, so it's going to be interesting to watch what happens with the Farm Bill. By the way, this is also not good news if you're a Republican, it seems to me. Well, if you're supporting Kevin McCarthy for Speaker in the once Paul Ryan leaves, or Steve Scalise, they're both not looking very good after being unable to whip the votes they needed into shape to get what they wanted. I mean, they're clearly going to be the front runners still, but you never know who might emerge saying it's time for a complete change.
Absolutely. But
and you love that as a Democrat.
Well, of course.
But you don't imagine the Republicans are going to be able to name the next Speaker of the House,
I
do
would
you?
Hope the Republicans can't name the next Speaker. It would be, and I think the national overall political landscape looks to be very good for the Democrats who want to flip congressional seats.
All right, we're going to get into all that. But let's talk, Lisa Raham, last night, holy cow. What I'd love to do, if you don't mind,
okay.
is we had five candidates last night. Clay Tippins, Brian Kemp, Hunter Hill, Casey Cagle, and Michael Williams. The five remaining, we've had a couple drop out.
Two dropped out, correct.
Maybe I shouldn't start. Maybe it's not. Well, no, let me start with you. And if you feel you've got to be cautious about your analysis, please do. I want to go around and get kind of general impressions of how you thought things unfolded and what struck you last night, Lisa.
What struck me the most was Hunter Hill. He came ready to fight and really took aim at Casey Cagle from the start and till the finish. All of them maintained their positions. Immigration became a hot topic, as expected. Gun control, not so hot. But overall, I think they all held their own.
So, let's set that up. Hunter, we believe Casey Cagle, if the polling is correct, will be in a runoff. He doesn't have enough to go over 50. Hunter Hill, Brian Kemp, fighting for second. So it's interesting that Hunter Hill came out as strong about Casey Cagle, Jim.
And Casey Cagle went after Hunter Hill, which is kind of telling.
Okay. I thought the strategy that Hunter Hill employed, look, I'm not a political consultant. I don't know this world as well as you do, probably, Loretta. I thought, why did Hunter Hill choose to go after Casey Cagle? His biggest opponent at next Tuesday's election is Brian Kemp. And yet I thought Hunter ended up taking more flack than anybody else on that stage, with the exception of Casey Cagle. Did you hear what I'm saying, Loretta?
Well, I mean, what Jim's indicated by Casey Cagle coming out of the box at Hunter Hill, I think Hunter anticipated that happening. I mean, it was right out of the box. And there's been a little bit of bad blood between those two campaigns because there was let's say, anonymous flyer is the best way to say it, very critical of Hunter, and no one's claimed responsibility.
Yeah, Hunter Hill talks one way in Buckhead and another way when he's running for governor.
And he believes Casey Cagle is at the root of it as
well. And the lieutenant governor's comments last night mirrored what was in the flyer. So they were already kind of hot with one another, and they've served with one another, so there may be underlying issues there as well. And then you saw Clay Tippins kind of taking on Hunter from the other side. And so I think he anticipated going into that debate that, you know, he was going to be in the hot seat. I thought it was also interesting that Brian Kemp used an opportunity when he was able to ask his question, he asked Clay Tippins a question about Casey Cagle. So what does Casey Cagle do, and how has he made his income outside of the legislature? And that was a crafty way of Brian Kemp not going directly after Casey Cagle.
That is called let's you and him fight.
Let's listen to the popcorn, we actually have that exchange ready to listen to, Loretta.
As you know, I've been in the private sector for 30 years, started a lot of businesses, started my first business with a pickup truck and a shovel, and I know you've been in the private sector as well, providing for your family. And I just wanted to know, you know, outside of Lieutenant Governor Cagle's government paycheck, how do you think he makes the rest of his living?
Usually I've got good answers to questions. I really couldn't tell you the answer to that, to be honest with you. I said earlier, I think after 28 years, Casey Cagle's bought and paid for.
No one has to question my where my income is derived from. I've been a businessman for 32 years, and I've filled out financial disclosures every single year. And for anyone to make an accusation that I am bought and paid for is absolutely wrong.
Okay, that's Brian Kemp asking Clay Tippins the question, and then Casey Cagle jumping in on all that. What was your general reaction to watching the debate, Melita?
Well, I think these Republican candidates undo many years of economic development efforts by the chambers of commerce in the state and by the state trying to be a place for business. It's a pretty scary prospect to have any one of those in the executive mansion after November's election. They sure do love their pickup trucks and their guns.
I'm going to give you, you're the Republican in here today, Loretta. Please go ahead and respond before we move on.
Well, I think maybe I'm going to take the high road on this one and say that I think that Republicans have done an enormous amount for economic development over the last not just 8 years, but 16 years of Republican leadership in this state. We've maintained a AAA bond rating. We've seen big companies relocate to Georgia. We have a very fertile ground for businesses to not only relocate, but to grow here.
Oh, I'm not quibbling with what has just happened. I'm saying that the prospect of having one of these yahoos in charge is frightening moving forward.
That's Melita Hayes, Democrat.
But Bill, if I could just throw some oil on the water here and calm things down a little bit. This was a 5-person debate. And if you contrast it with the debate between Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans, it was a hodgepodge affair simply because of the numbers. I mean, with the Democratic debate, you had a really interesting conversation between two people like you said, you were seeing candidate A go to candidate D in order to attack candidate B. On the Republican side, it was a very confusing session.
Very, very strategic in some cases. Yeah. And they were all trying to spew out their platforms very, very quickly, probably because the field was so wide. So, yeah, there was a lot of that going on as well. A lot of rhetoric.
And Hunter Hill needs to knock Brian Kemp out, and he needs to show that he's feisty enough to take on Cagle if he wants to be the person in that runoff slot.
But it's so true, but there wasn't enough of back and forth between Hunter Hill and Brian Kemp. They both teamed up to take on
Brian
Casey Kemp Cagle.
Brian Kemp didn't want that. He wanted Hunter Hill and Clay Tippins to do his work for him.
Yeah, that's again why I was surprised that given the opportunity, if the polling shows, as it does lately, that maybe Hunter Hill is in third place with Brian Kemp
getting closer
to a runoff spot, I would have thought that Hunter Hill's job would have been to tear down Brian Kemp. Didn't you, Lisa?
Yeah, and it did not happen. They both teamed up on Casey Cagle, and you had Clay Tippins spewing in, you know, random thoughts here and there. So, yeah, it ended up being a very different debate.
Loretta, it's unfair to take the events that happened this morning outside of Houston and try to then, in retrospect, talk about the conversation about guns last night. No one knew what was going to happen today. Still, give us your thoughts on how completely in all of the Republican candidates are and were last night on unfettered access to guns.
Well, clearly the events in Texas today are a tragedy, and I think everybody could concur with that. I think we have seen this field running very far to the right on the issue of gun rights. I think that there is concern within some moderate segments of the Republican Party that by running so far, that in a general election, this is going to be tough. And I think, you know, this week we saw a survey out by Survey USA. That was a WAGA Fox 5 poll, I think, that was commissioned.
11 Alive.
11 Alive, I'm sorry, poll that was commissioned. And, you know, we see that Georgians pretty much are tempered on this issue. And they're tempering even more as these events are occurring. And so it's going to be very interesting whoever comes out of this primary election and then the runoff. And even if they begin to level off a little bit in the runoff election, because then they've got to go into a general election where the whole game is quite different. So what they're doing now is going to definitely have an effect in the general election. And there's some concern.
Lisa, there was an exchange that you were front row and center for that speaks to how guns played in the debate. And this was Clay Tippins attacking Brian Hill. No, yeah. Tippins didn't go after Hill on guns, did he? Okay. Yeah. Oh, yes, he did. I'm sorry. Hill, Hunter Hill. Yes, he did. Of course he did. This is interesting because it relates to the fact that at some point after Parkland, Hunter Hill made a remark in a public setting in which he suggested that the age for some weapons
for long guns should be
21. Right. Mm-hmm. And he quickly had to backtrack on that. So let's listen to how Tippins went after him and then how Hunter Hill responded.
Run to be the governor of the 7th biggest state. Give me a break. The dog ate my homework. I didn't understand isn't a good enough excuse. I absolutely think that Hunter Hill, his support for Second Amendment rights would be treacherous, and I'll proudly say so.
Well, Clay has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars attacking my record on guns. The facts are what the facts are. I'm the only candidate on this stage that has fought to defend our Constitution and the Second Amendment on 3 combat tours and have voted to expand the Second Amendment every time I've had a chance. Look at the voting record. I voted for it. And here's the bottom line is that is why the NRA has given me an A. I earned the A because of my record. So, you know, the reality is I would think that you would have integrity of a man that served in our uniform, but you've showed an utter lack of integrity in this campaign, and you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You're a lot more like a career politician.
Lisa, it was another exchange. Here we go. We see this very clearly. Everybody racing to prove their strongest on protecting gun rights.
Yeah, and all this debate taking place right over Brian Kemp, who sits right between. And there was still a lot of talk about that Brian Kemp commercial that is out. A lot of whispering behind the scenes. And it was just odd to see.
This is the Jake commercial.
Yeah. And it was just odd to see this debate taking, you know, he's sitting right in the middle while all this is going on and you know, not wanting to interject or anything like that. So that was the real interesting part for the room to see how Brian Kemp was taking all of this in.
I want to take a break right now, but before I do, we talked a minute ago about the suspicion that the lieutenant governor, that Casey Cagle's people have been going after Hunter Hill, accusing him of saying one thing to his constituents in Buckhead, another on the Republican state campaign trail. We just got a copy. I was just sent a text with a photograph of a new flyer. Meet the Buckhead boys. Hunter Hill says anything. And con man Clay Tippins, they're in it for themselves, not us. Now, we have no idea that that comes from. We don't know who that comes from. But in the debate last night, we certainly got the sense that perhaps Casey Cagle was certainly strongly supportive of the messages like this. You're listening to Political Rewind. We're going to take a break and come right back.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Melita Easters, Loretta Lepore, Lisa Raham, and Jim Galloway in the studio for today's show. You can tweet us at PoliticsGPB. Watch us on the GPB News Facebook page if you want to see what everybody's looking like on the show today. Jim, you said an important thing before we move beyond the debates in general here. There are two more debates over the weekend. Channel 2 is, I think, staging two debates on Sunday afternoon.
Right. One and 2 p.m.
Okay. So there's one more chance to see him. But you said an important thing. If you're not sure whether you want to vote Republican or Democrat in this election next Tuesday, and you watched both of the GPB, Atlanta Press Club debates, you probably, because of the dynamic of two as opposed to five candidates, saw a little bit more substantive conversation in the Democrats than in the Republicans. Not necessarily I don't think that's a reflection of who they are. It's the numbers alone.
Right, right. It's just, it is. And look, we've had to deal with larger candidate fields. Actually, we had two dropouts before last night's Republican debate. So it could have been seven people up there. Mm-hmm. And it's unwieldy. And it's, at some point, I think you do have to look at the format to make sure it's getting across the information to voters as efficiently as possible.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. All right, well, I just wanted to make that point that I'm not sure that what we saw yesterday, last night, was just people, you know, bearing down on their message and, right, and attacking, and not much substance.
Well, it was kind of limited to two issues primarily that took up most of the time, right? And so those issues like transportation or education really didn't even come to the fore. And so in the Democratic debate, because there were only two candidates, they got to cover a fuller range of issues. And so that's unfortunate for, the voters of Georgia, the Republican voters, that they didn't have an opportunity to see these candidates exercise their opinions on or their plans and policies on some of these other issues.
But if
this was not a reflection of Lisa, I want to say that issue to me.
And in all fairness, we tried to give them, they were allotted 30 seconds in most cases, but we tried to allot for 60 seconds on the more, the greater issues, just to give them a chance to spew out their true platform. Yeah. So it doesn't work with a large, number of candidates, though.
With a Republican contest that's likely to go off into a runoff, we'll have 9 weeks to kind of bear down on the two survivors.
We'll be real tired of both of them by the end.
I suspect that.
How tired.
I suspect that is probably quite true. Before we move off gubernatorial politics, Stacey Abrams has won the lion's share of national Democratic leader endorsements in this race, and she added another one yesterday or the day before. She got the endorsement of Bernie Sanders, which is a pretty big endorsement.
It's in the current Democratic climate, that's a pretty big
one.
You're expecting what Jim's saying, I think, Melita, is that we're expecting really progressive Georgia Democrats to show up at the polls.
Well, I think
which hurts Stacey Evans if it's true.
All indications are that there's a good bit of early voting, particularly in the upper arc of the suburbs. And I think that's not just because of the governor's race. There are a lot of primaries for House and Senate seats.
Yeah. We should mention that Vincent Fort, our friend Vincent Fort,
former
state senator, is standing with Evans, right?
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting.
And he was Bernie Sanders'
prime
guy
here.
Vincent,
I tried calling him to get insight, but didn't get a call back.
Vincent got out front on Bernie Sanders early. He was a vociferous supporter of his, and it just proves, Loretta, all's fair in politics. Bernie Sanders turns around after Vincent's endorsed Evans and goes with Abrams.
Right. Well, he's going for the candidates and not for, the surrogates. So, but here in Georgia, I don't know in a general election that Bernie Sanders' endorsement is going to carry the day.
Yeah, probably not a whole lot of import. But Stacey Abrams does continue this march of national support for her candidacy. So,
I believe she's leading most polls. What, 2-1 at this point?
Yeah, the numbers are the numbers show her
by a healthy mark.
By
a margin. But there's also there's more undecided in the Democratic side of things than there are on the Republican side of things.
Okay, Melita Easters, I'm curious to let's talk a little bit about you have spent devoted your career, much of it, to working to get Democratic women to run for office. And in the past, there have been challenges around how many women were willing to step forward. But the landscape here in Georgia and across the country has been transformed entirely.
That's absolutely true. And it in part began when Hillary Clinton lost. But I also think in Georgia, the women who were inspired to get involved in a new fashion really rallied behind John Ossoff's candidacy. And we see that many of the women who are now running for state House and state Senate seats in the upper part of the suburbs, Cobb, Gwinnett, North Fulton, were precinct captains in the Ossoff campaign. So there's been quite an effect from that campaign of women being involved, putting out campaign signs, and then deciding to run for themselves. And we have a very diverse slate of women. We have our first Muslim candidate. We have women who have prior military service. We have women who you might never have predicted would run for office. And I think that's really a reflection back on the disappointment that Hillary Clinton lost. But it's also a reflection that they're tired of seeing the pale male patriarchy in charge in Georgia, and they're ready to shake things up and grab them by the midterms.
And there was a grassroots effort under the dome this last session with the female legislators holding a press conference and making a direct cry for women to get involved in politics, led by Erica Thomas. So it's really interesting how the movement is taking ground.
Oh, it absolutely is. Mm-hmm. And some of these women are just so incredible. Zara Krinchek, who is running for a Senate seat in Gwinnett County, you know, she had graduated from the Air Force Academy, served a couple of terms, tours of duty. Her military record can match that of Hunter Hill. And then she went on to law school, graduated with honors. I'm not sure he could ever do that. And and served as deputy counsel for Governor Barnes while he was in office. She's going to make an amazing candidate for the state Senate.
And the message is just simple. You know, we are qualified, we are here, we are able, and we should be in office.
Loretta, and we need to be in the room where it happens, at the table where the decisions are made.
Loretta, Julianne Thompson, who's a frequent panelist on mm-hmm. Political Rewind, a Republican, of course, she raised the point earlier in the campaign cycle that it was a little bit more difficult right now to recruit Republican women to get out. What do you see happening there?
Well, the Republicans are much slower to have an active recruitment effort of female candidates. We're seeing a pickup at the national level. We're seeing a number increase in the number of PACs in particular that are supporting female congressional candidates. They're very aggressive. They're getting in on the ground floor. They're vetting candidates. They're recruiting candidates. Not so much of that effort has moved down to the local level.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember her name. There is a woman who's mounting a primary challenge to Marty Harbin, state senator over in Fayette County. Do you recall her name?
I don't.
Okay. That's the only female non-incumbent that I can find.
I know who you mean, and I'm sorry, I don't remember her name. Yes, she. I think is she a realtor?
Yes,
that she's
realtor.
In the real estate industry.
Right. Okay.
And she's gotten some backing from, I think, the business community.
The Georgia Chamber
to get her into this race.
You know, Loretta, it's interesting that we talk a little bit about the women who've come forward mm-hmm. on the Democratic side to run for offices here in Georgia and across the country. And, of course, we know in Pennsylvania elections this week, women, Democratic women, scored strongly in primary races, which does not mean they're going to win their general races, especially because it was the most liberal candidates among the women. And we'll see how that plays out in the fall.
Right. And the other thing is that there, while, you know, we've seen a ton of stories about all of the women running. Right. Texas had a significant number of women running in their primary, particularly on the Democratic side, Republican also. But those fields narrow after the primaries. And then you get into the reality of how does this district lean? We've seen on the Republican side two strong candidates who won congressional primaries, Debbie Lasko in Arizona, who won a special election Republican, and Carol Miller in West Virginia. And so we are likely to see an uptick of women in the Congress going into the next Congress, but it remains to be seen whether they, you know, how many will be Democrats and how many will be Republicans.
And Loretta, that's Tricia Stearns.
Tricia Stearns,
Who's running against Marty Harbin down in Fayette County, and she is running with business support to protect the film industry tax breaks. Because Pinewood Studios is down there.
Mm-hmm. As long as Tom Faust, our producer, of course, Melita says you've had the quote of the day that you're using this as you go out and try to back women candidates, raise money for female candidates.
By the midterms. And women are prepared to do that. And, you know, one of the things I think we see both with the Republican women candidates and the Democratic women candidates is that they are more likely to knock on doors and run the old-fashioned grassroots community-based campaigns, which are suddenly becoming more effective than just relying on robocalls and pieces of mail.
So let me read a couple of quick comments we've gotten from listeners, and in this case, viewers on Facebook Live. Kelly Wolf says, I really would like to see more women voting in this election. I'm interested to see how that changes the landscape in Georgia. My gut is it will change it into a more diverse and progressive state. Maybe. We will see how that goes. There are going to be conservative women who will win elections, whether it's here in Georgia or elsewhere. But thank you for that. I also want to say, Melita, you got some pushback from Alan Williams. Says, why does it seem as though it's the Democrat who takes the low road? He's referring to the fact that you called the Republican candidates for governor yahoos. So Alan Williams was a little disappointed that you used that term.
And I want to just interject one thing. You know, I think Malika's comments about grassroots and, you know, door knocking and, you know, door-to-door phone and individual phone calls. You know, Republican women, particularly at the grassroots level, have been fierce in this regard over many, many years. That doesn't always necessarily translate into women running for office. So I think that's been the difference on the Republican side versus the Democratic side.
I think the battle between the two Stacys, I think, has piqued an interest in women all over now. And really seeing that go to work and in action, I think that's changed the minds of many.
Well, and there are a lot of women who are friends for decades who have had to just decide not to talk about that particular race when they go to lunch. They'll talk about everything else because they might be on different sides of which Stacey they support. So there's a lot of division amongst women about that race.
All right, let's do this. Let's get our second break of the show out of the way and come back. We have a lot more to talk about on today's Political Rewind. Remember, tweet us at PoliticsGPB if you want to share your thoughts about our conversation or continue to watch us on Facebook Live. This is Political Rewind.
I'm Ira Flatow. This week on Science Friday, Michael Pollan is back to talk about his new book, How to Change Your Mind. In it, he tells tales of his explorations of consciousness, using psychedelic drugs, and writes about how those substances are being used now to treat depression, addiction, and to help us face death. It's all on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. If you're listening in real time, it's Friday afternoon, and everybody here is, I think, ready for the weekend. I want to go around. Who's watching the royal wedding tomorrow? Nobody wants to admit
YouTube.
It.
YouTube.
Oh, I'm absolutely there.
If I happen to I'm roll over and can find the remote, I might put it on.
I don't get it. I wouldn't miss it. I'm going to get my wife up, and we're going to sit and have fun. Jim, you had an interesting column today. I'm sorry, an item in the Jolt, which is the daily kind of summary of interesting political news on Politically Georgia. You talk about a candidate for appeals court.
This is Ken Shigley.
Ken Shigley. Tell us what Ken Shigley, this isn't going to change the election. This probably isn't going to make a huge impact on our lives in Georgia. But he did something very unusual.
Right. And I've got to give a tip of the hat to Robin McDonald. She works over at the Daily Report. And she was the one who found this video clip of Ken Shigley speaking to a black audience in Atlanta, a very small one. He's getting up there telling everybody what a state court of appeals judge does. And he begins by and he starts to tell of a case that he had as a young assistant prosecutor in Douglas County, where he was thrown into a case as it was going midway through. It was trying a young black man on felony drug possession charges, and he's telling this crowd in the middle of it, and this happened 40 years ago, that he realized that this was a political prosecution. The young man had been going to college. He had been registering African Americans to vote in the local Douglas County community, and he says he couldn't stop it. He was the lead prosecutor, and he couldn't stop it. He tried to lose it on appeal, and he couldn't lose it there. I've never heard a story of that kind uttered by any candidate, most particularly a judicial candidate. This is a two-man race. He's facing Ken Hodges, a former Daugherty County prosecutor.
Yeah, who ran for his first run for state office.
No, I think he was attorney general a few years
ran
back.
Ran for attorney general. It's a really interesting admission to make, especially in the heat of a campaign. But it isn't, Lisa, as if we don't suspect things like this were happening.
I was going to say, I'm looking at this like, hasn't this been going on for years and years and years? But yeah, I guess it isn't verbalized.
Nobody talks about it.
By prosecutors or those in authority.
And you know, it occurred to me, Bill, after I wrote that, is that I hadn't done the follow-up. And the follow-up is, if you think this was a moral dilemma, and he that's what he said, then after you leave the DA's office, what do you do about it? Do you go to that young man and offer to represent him and see if you can get that that sentence expunged? And the answer I got was a non-answer.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, I just thought that was an interesting tidbit, because it's part of this effort that I talk about, particularly on Two-Way Street, which does so much with arts and culture, this way in which we try to reconcile the dark past of this state. And Ken Shigley Shigley did take some steps to bring that to light, and I thought it was
so worth honesty pays off. Yeah. Is that what he was?
We'll see. That's something to be settled on Tuesday.
So speaking of dealing with racial issues, I thought we should spend a couple minutes on something that happened in the U.S. House as they were debating the farm bill. It's going to take a little bit of a setup, but it involves David Scott, Democratic member of the U.S. House from Georgia. There was a provision that was put into the farm bill that would have given about $90-some million for the historically black land grant colleges
to offer scholarships, agricultural scholarships.
So we should make the point that this is why it takes a little setup. In 1860, the Congress established land-grant universities, period, which is what became University of Georgia, for instance.
No, that was back in 1780 or so.
Oh, that's okay. I see.
This is for African Americans that were set up.
Well, in 1890, the money was put aside for land grant institutions for African American schools, but it wasn't as much as the original land grant institution grants were. Okay, so David Scott says $90 million plus was put into the farm bill to help with scholarships for young African-American students to go into agriculture, to go into environmental sciences, that sort of thing. He contends the money was stripped out of that bill. Now, Mike Conaway, who is the chair of the House Ag Committee, says the money was never there to begin with. We just put that there to authorize the eventual money. That isn't the point. I want you to hear how impassioned David Scott, in a very unusual speech on the floor of the U.S. House, got in dealing with this issue.
This is, unfortunately, a racist farm bill. Black people in this country have suffered too long, and we need to put a stop to it. I'm here. I know that this House will not put the money back in. It was just $1 million a year for each of the 5 years to try to get people in. Every black man does not necessarily want to play football or basketball. They want to be scientists. They want to feed the future. This is a terrible bill. And I'm asking that the Senate put the $95 million back into this bill, and let's finally treat the 1890 land-grant African-American schools with the respect and the dignity that you've never given to them.
David Scott, Jim, by the end of that speech, David Scott was in tears on the floor.
He was in tears, as he was walking away, he's using a cane now. As he was walking away, he got into a verbal tiff with Michael Conaway.
Yeah, Mike Conaway stood up and said, we never had the money in the bill. We just had authorization to eventually find the funding. And he was, of course, had been recognized by the chair. Scott wasn't, but Scott began shouting off microphone back at him.
But this has been one of David Scott's causes of getting more money into HCBUs. This whole farm bill thing. What we're seeing is a breakdown in the alliance that has kept it going for 40 years between urban Democrats and rural farm interests, and that alliance has just fallen apart.
What did you think when you heard that, Melina?
Well, it reminded me of a young David Scott in the state Senate and how eloquent and passionate he always was, particularly about social justice issues and gun safety issues. He has always been a powerful speaker, and he may have a cane now, but certainly his voice is as golden as ever.
A slice of authentic politics. Like you said, he was always very impassioned about that issue. And with so many of our black schools failing, you could see why. Yeah.
Loretta, what did you make when you heard that?
Like financially, I should say.
Well, I mean, it's obviously deeply, he feels deeply convicted about this issue and other aspects of the farm bill. And he's been very vocal all along the way since the bill has been introduced on various parts of it. He's been uncharacteristically vocal in an inflammatory way. Which is not what I have known of him to be. I listened to him, in fact, when he was part of the confirmation hearing for Secretary Perdue, and he could not have been more eloquent and speaking to their relationship. And that relationship sort of speaks to the scenario that Jim just laid out about this connection between urban Democrats and rural farm communities, because those two represent those two groups. And so I think it's highly unfortunate that it's risen to a level where Representative Scott feels he doesn't have a way to weigh in a more effective way. It seems that he feels a need to express himself in a very bellicose way, and I don't know why that is.
You know, if you stripped out his use of the word racist, that's blunt. He believes it. I have no question. It's a very tough word to apply on the floor of the United States House. But there's no doubt all of what he said was impassioned.
HBCUs are the heart of the African-American community. And so that was his heart speaking. And, I felt the tears and I understood them.
What's interesting, Billy, this is obviously a long-term negotiation that Scott's been carrying on with Democrats or with Republicans, and it's kind of like those volcanoes in Hawaii. You know, it heats up and heats up, and then boom, it blows up.
Yeah, well, we've heard John Lewis explode like that on the floor of the U.S. House, Melita.
Absolutely.
All right, listen, we're coming down to the end of the show. It is again, if you're listening in real time, we have one weekend left before Tuesday's primary election. Where will you be? What are you going to be doing to work for candidates this weekend?
I'm working on planning the celebration of winning women on Thursday after the primary, when the new gubernatorial nominee will speak alongside the other women on the statewide ticket at the first big public event where they all three speak, or where they all three or four speak.
All right. Loretta, you're not actively involved with the campaign this cycle, to the best of my knowledge.
I'm not.
So you'll be watching from the sideline.
I will be.
Is there one race that you're particularly interested in beyond the most dramatic ones that we know, the big races?
I'm somewhat curious about how the congressional races in the 6th and 7th, particularly on the Democratic side, are going to play out.
Yeah.
And so who the challengers will be to the Republican incumbents. I'm of course, presuming that Rob Woodall is going to win. I might be presumptuous in that regard.
He has a challenge from the right.
He does. And a former military veteran also. And so but I'm curious to see how those elections play out.
Well, we are going to be talking more about the congressional races on Monday's show because we didn't get into them today. But we want to give our listeners a chance to hear where they stand as of Monday, the day before the election. As we finish the show, my thanks to Melita Easters, to Loretta Lepore, Lisa Raham. It's great to have you here in the studio.
Thank you.
And again,
for having
congratulations
me.
On doing your best
in that
debate
that.
Last
so
night.
Much.
Jim Galloway, are you going to take the weekend off?
We got
two
debates on Sunday. Two debates on Sunday.
All right.
I think you take it off.
Just a couple of notes as we end. We will, of course, be back on Monday with another Political Rewind here. Jim Galloway will join me again. But we're going to do a special show on Tuesday. We really want to be with you on Election Day. We've talked so much about it. We're going to have Jim Galloway here for that show. Tamar Hallerman, your colleague from the Washington Bureau, who's in town covering the congressional races as they come to the end of the primary season. Ed Lindsay, a longtime Republican legislator, will be with us, as will Michael Owens from Cobb County on that special Election Day show. So in addition to Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, join us on Tuesday at 2 o'clock for our Election Day show. That's it for us today. Have a great weekend. See you again next week for Political Rewind.